You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Buck back with you. Buck, what is going on?
Man, it's exciting. It's exciting. The football weekend is upon us. I mean, we have so many things to talk about, but just really excited. I mean, we're now in the routine. We've gotten kind of our mojo back after kind of dealing with the preseason games thrown on all different days, but now we're back. And so I just kind of love the routine and familiarity of what football season is, particularly when you have all the seasons going, NFL and college.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's fun with this new format. We've got 5 episodes a week. So we've really got a ton of content coming your way on a daily basis. Now, the Thursday, Friday pod's going to be a little bit shorter, but we'd rather do that and give you an extra one. So that's what the game plan is. And on today's episode, we've got an interesting topic. We're talking about rookie impact scores. And I'm going to explain that in just a moment. It's something that's brand new that we're rolling out here that I'm fired up about, as well as we'll get into our Move the Sticks game of the week we're looking at, and then a article that grabbed both of our attention because it's a topic that we've discussed for several years now about the dying deep ball. This was an article that was written on ESPN.com. I believe it was Brooke Pryor was the author. They did a wonderful job. It's a great piece, but it's a topic that we have discussed previously, so we're going to get to that as well. But Buck, as we start off here, I want to explain this new thing we've got going. Our buddy Jack Andrade, who is a researcher to the stars here at the NFL Media Group, I presented him with an off-season challenge that he accepted and put a ton of work into, which is trying to find ways we can quantify an entire rookie class. You know, we'll do things where we'll say these are the top 25 rookies at the quarter mark, halfway mark, you know, end of the season. And we'll say, oh, this is the offensive rookie of the year. This is a defensive rookie of the year. But what about on a week by week basis, how much impact you're getting from your rookie class? Like, who is really relying the most on these first year players? So there's got to be a way to quantify this. So Jack has worked all offseason and he's looked at previous years to see, okay, this is what the numbers spit out. Does this match up kind of with what we saw in true impact? So it's a long, complicated formula. I won't get into explaining all of it. But we are going to do this every week where we're going to look back just on that last week's games and say, who are the 5 teams that got the most impact from their rookies? So, I mean, to me, I think this is a different way to really kind of put some numbers with the scouting, something that we're always trying to combine here.
Well, coming from my background, coming as scouts, we are always trying to figure out, one, how do you project college prospects into what they could be or what they will become at the next level? Well, now this gives us quantitative data to be able to kind of track their progress over time. And as an evaluator, as the league is changing, you want to see that, hey, these rookies that we're taking, whether they're high or low draft picks, undrafted guys, if we put them on the field, they're impacting the game in a positive way. We know it. If you can have a collection of young players, young, cheap players playing, it allows you to kind of earmark your dollars elsewhere for your stars. This gives us an opportunity to see which classes are playing well, and then we can kind of speculate how these teams may go forward based on the success of their young guys.
No doubt. It's a great exercise, and it just gives us something to talk about. So I'm going to give you the 5 players first, just real quick to kind of show you how this thing works, and then we're going to focus our attention on the teams here. So the top 5 impact scores from week 1 of rookies that impacted their team the most. Number 1 was Anthony Richardson, and the points, you know, kind of irrelevant, but that's, you know, 21.6 points. So it's Anthony Richardson, number 1, Bijan Robinson, number 2, Puka Nacua, number 3, C.J. Stroud, number 4, Jordan Addison, number 5. Now, this is not just for offensive players. It just so happens in the first week that those 5 offensive guys were the most impactful players on their team. All right, Buck, this is what I'm fired up about here because, you know, that's the individuals. You talk about the individual scores, but as we look at the team scores, that shows you which teams are really getting impact from the rookies. So let's talk about these top 3 teams and that got big time contributions from the rookie class. Let's start here at number three, which was the Patriots. You know, again, they did not win against the Philadelphia Eagles, but they had the third biggest impact from the rookies, led by Christian Gonzalez, seven tackles, had a TFL, had a pass defensed, big time corner that kind of fell in their lap in the first round.
Yeah, fell in their lap. And, you know, the Patriots walked away with an L, but you had to come away impressed with the way that they looked. I thought this team looked better than anyone could imagine, considering maybe the lack of firepower that they had offensively, but defensively, they continued to plug and play. And they made life very challenging and difficult for Jalen Hurts. Christian Gonzalez, all the reports coming out of training camp, what we saw in preseason, was that they felt like they have a guy who has the potential to be a shutdown corner. You throw him into the mix, and in the first game, he didn't disappoint. You talked about the tackles, the pass defense, the sticky coverage that he provided on the perimeter. If you're the New England Patriots, you feel great about your young pick because he enables you to play the kind of style that you want to play, which is a lot of man-to-man, a lot of in-your-face coverage, because that is going to give the Patriots an opportunity to get after the passer. So it was a great job by them.
Yeah, no, great start for him. Marte Mapu, one of our favorites out of Sac State, he did a nice job getting on the field as their, you know, kind of hybrid safety linebacker. Had a few tackles, did a nice job as well. He factored into their overall score. So they were number three. Number two on the list, I guess, shouldn't be a surprise. When you have the second and third overall picks, you probably should have some impact from those rookies. And that is exactly where the Houston Texans found themselves. C.J. Stroud threw for 242. Will Anderson played really, really well, did some nice things on the defensive side of the ball. So overall contributions from their rookie class, pretty impactful.
Yeah, very impactful. And you want to see your top guys make plays right away. Will Anderson was nearly unblockable already. You know, and it's so funny, DJ, in the run-up to the draft, you kind of like poke holes in all these players that have been established stars for forever. And then you watch them play, and they make plays right away. We talk about Will Anderson. We'll talk about Jalen Carter later. But, I mean, these guys come right off the field. We talk about them being good. Will Anderson made a play. And then C.J. Stroud, it was tough sledding at times. It's kind of challenging. He's trying to figure it out. But passing yards, you saw 242 pass yards. He made some plays. This is one where the Texans feel good about their rookie class because they have big-time talent. It's just a matter of them settling in and playing up to their potential.
No doubt. Then we get to the number one team on the list. And this is not Nabil influence. A lot of times if we're talking about the Packers, it ends up being impacted by Nabil. This was legitimate.
He had to have something to do with this. I'm sure he was pounding poor Jack, trying to say, hey, man, there has to be some other guys. There got to be some points. You can find me a couple more points behind the decimal point to push him up. Because, yeah, the Packers are at the top of the list. But it's been a very impressive list of players that made contributions in that first game.
Yeah, well, let's go through them here. Just look at some of the rookies that they had. Carl Brooks, 31 snaps, had a sack, did a nice job up front for them. Lucas Van Ness played 46 snaps, which, again, the playtime factors into this formula, had two tackles and a sack. Jaden Reed, 37 snaps. He ended up getting 46 receiving yards and had a nice punt return, or had 54 punt return yards. Luke Musgrave played 56 snaps. He had 50 receiving yards, including that big one down the field. And then Anders Carlson, the kicker, had a field goal and five extra points. So all those guys factored in and made an impact, and that's why the Green Bay Packers, coming off a big win over the Bears, used their rookies in a more impactful way than any other team in the league week one.
It's part of a theme in Green Bay. If you go back and you look at this team, you look at their defense, they have eight first-round picks within the two-deep depth chart. Guys that are potential to rotate and make plays, you see that. This is a team that's unafraid to play their young players. So you talk about five guys making contributions. Lucas Van Ness getting snaps right away, first-round pick. Luke Musgrave's making plays in the passing game, being able to get something for Jaden Reed. Remember, there are so many questions and concerns about the receiving core, and they're doing it with young guys. Say what you will about the Green Bay Packers and their philosophy of draft and develop and put those guys on the field. Right now, they're sitting at 1-0 because that philosophy works for them, works for this franchise.
Yeah, no doubt. And this is something that, you know, it's exciting to me when you have the combination of the youth and you're winning games and you're being productive. Like, it's one thing, hey, we got to kind of bide our time here. We got to take our lumps. We're going to play the young guys. Then they're going to develop, and hopefully we have something. But this is a situation where not only they're playing the young guys, they're winning with these young guys.
Yeah, winning with the young guys. So the standard doesn't drop. And everyone's kind of dismissed the Green Bay Packers. But this is a team that looks like they may be able to kind of hang around and get into the tournament doing it a different way. We'll know more about them after this week. But they're off to a solid start because their rookies make contributions right away.
No doubt. Hats off to Brian Gutekunst and their personnel department. Nice job getting early returns on that rookie class. So again, we'll keep up with this on a weekly basis. We might expand it, maybe get to top five, top six classes. But first week here, let's give some kudos here to those three teams, the Packers, the Texans, the Patriots, for using those young guys and watching them do some good thing. So good on them. It's a very cool topic that we'll keep up with throughout the season. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to look at the biggest game of the week and also dive into this topic on the deep ball and why it's disappearing in the NFL. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
It's time for the MTS Game of the Week presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. This week, the Chiefs are at the Jaguars. The spread is -3.5, favoring the Chiefs. The over-under is 51. Let's break it down, DJ. I'm loving this because I'm going to be on the sideline on the call for the Jaguars. This is a huge game for the Jacksonville Jaguars. They lost twice to them last year. The Chiefs put them out, and this is one that may be deemed a little bit of a revenge game. From my vantage point, this is about can the Jaguars go toe-to-toe with a high-powered offense. We can sit here and talk about, defensively, they can hold the score down. I think this is one that has to be a shootout for the Jacksonville Jaguars. If you look on paper, in my mind, they have better weapons on the outside. Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk, you think about Evan Ingram, Zay Jones. Those guys, I think they surpass what you have. Travis Kelce is a monster, but those other guys, I think the Jaguars have that. The X factor or the key to it, though, is the trigger man on the other side, Pat Mahomes, two-time MVP, Super Bowl champion, all the accolades that you can throw. He understands how to play with lesser thans and get them to play at a high level. Coming off a loss in the opener to Detroit, he's going to be on his game. It's a matter of can Trevor Lawrence match them blow for blow? He has a better supporting cast, but can he get this team to score and score and score and make this a track meet as opposed to a knockdown, drag out heavyweight fight that goes four quarters?
How do you feel about that matchup up front? We talk about the skill players for the Jags and throw Calvin Ridley mm-hmm. in there and what he looked like mm-hmm. last week. And you know that Doug's going to have it schemed up. My question is, with Chris Jones back in the mix, what do you feel about this front here, how this offensive line matches up?
Well, you know, I know normally on this, we would be very impartial about the matchup. But here's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping in Jacksonville that it ends up creeping up above 90. Chris Jones hasn't had a lot of training camp. I'm hoping that he has to wear that dark jersey with the sun beating down on him. And maybe, just maybe, after a couple snaps, the all-pro disruptive number one defensive tackle in the game, maybe gets a little tired. And he's not able to be the vintage Chris Jones that we've seen. Because when he plays, there's no one in the league that can block him. And I'm not going to sit here and say that the Jaguars can handle him up front. But I'm hoping a little rust, a little acclimation period that he hasn't fully had, he's not vintage Chris Jones, and that gives the Jaguars just enough to be able to get the ball out to perimeter to those playmakers.
Yeah, to me, tempo can be a weapon. If you're looking at it from the Jags standpoint, especially you get Chris Jones out there, hey, keep him on the field, tempo him up, try and wear him down. I was actually talking to Rashawn Slater with the Chargers, and they've gone to, you know, a lot of tempo week one with Kellen Moore, and I asked him, you know, How is it for you guys? He's like, look, don't pretend like we don't get tired. Like offensively, when you run tempo, you get tired, but nothing compared to what happens to them. He's like, the pass rush slows down. You can move them more in the run game. And when you're doing a lot of it, you start doing it on a weekly basis, you're just going to be in a different type of cardio shape than teams that aren't dealing with tempo. So I think that could be a weapon for Jacksonville in this one. My thing is, though, you're not going to count on the Chiefs dropping a million balls like they did last week. That's not going to happen. Mahomes, to me, if you don't reroute and disrupt the rhythm of this group a little bit, they can get rolling. So I tend to lean towards your original thought, Buck. This is going to be a shootout. I don't mm-hmm. think they're keeping KC, you know, under 30. I think it's going to take more than 30 if they're going to win that game.
DJ, the million-dollar question, if I am the Jaguars coordinator, man or zone, right? Normally, everyone would say, hey, we're going to play zone. We're going to slow them down and those things. But what has happened in the past, they will quietly gut you with the running game. Isaiah Pacheco, Isaiah Allard, those guys kind of take turns, kind of getting up Jerick McKinnon. They kind of take turns, kind of cutting you. And you look up, you're like, man, they had 130 rushing yards under the radar.
Yeah.
To me, if you feel confident that you can cover them, this is a different unit than the ones that preceded their arrival. They don't have Tyreek Hill. They may not have the speed and explosiveness that they've normally had in there. Kadarius Toney's dealing with the knee. He's not necessarily the same. Maybe you can lock up and play a little more man. Maybe you can win on those early downs and force Pat Mahomes into these long yardage situations. Well, now you can dictate the terms whether I want to play man or zone on third and long and make Pat Mahomes have to think more than he's had to think of late, because everyone is just playing that soft umbrella coverage, and he is very comfortable taking the check down, down after down after down until he gets into the red zone.
Yeah, no, I think it's actually probably a good way here. We can segue to it in a little bit here, but that's, you know, topic we're going to get to after this one about the deep ball and how that's being taken away. And I think that kind of started with Patrick Mahomes. But if we're going to put a bow on this one, Buck, in terms of what you think Kansas City needs to do to get off to a hot start in this game, because to me, I think they can get out and play with the lead. That's how their team's built. Play with the lead, rush the passer. What is the key on the Kansas City side, in your opinion?
You know, it's funny, because if I'm Andy Reid and I'm thinking about this offense kind of slogging through, the one thing that I can do is, hey, man, let's quicken the pace and put more on Pat Mahomes' plate in terms of, hey, man, let him go. Let him get going. Let him get into a rhythm. He knows better than anybody on that coaching staff what he needs to get ready. Maybe they play a little quicker, find a way to get him some layups early, because everyone is scared of that MVP Pat Mahomes, that one that completes 35 or 40 for 400 yards. Let's see if we can get him heated up, because he has that ability, much like a Steph Curry. If he sees it go in the bucket early, you're in for a long day. So I'm Andy Reid. I'm trying to get number 15 ready and get him off to a hot start, because I know if he gets off to a hot start, there are not many teams that can beat us when he's playing at his best.
No doubt. I think that's a good way to put a bow on that one, Buck.
That was the MTS Game of the Week, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code MTS. That's code MTS only at DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL.
All right, we teased it, Buck. I mean, that article, and I know we had been texting about it, so I know you got a chance to look at it. But just, you know, what was your takeaway? We'll get to this topic here on the deep ball.
My takeaway on teams taking away the deep ball is it's a copycat league. And once the film circulates around the league, people are quick to take tactics that have worked. I go back to whatever Thursday night where we were working the Amazon game. It was the Buffalo Bills playing the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Buffalo Bills allowed the Kansas City Chiefs to run for over 200. I think it might have been 275 on the ground. But you look up at the end of the game, the Buffalo Bills were in a one-score game, and they had a chance to win the game. And this is when we're talking about the Chiefs at their pinnacle. Tyreek Hill playing at a crazy level. Travis Kelce is unguardable. Pat Mahomes is playing like a wizard from the pocket. And from that moment, DJ, we have seen more teams employ split safety looks, two deep safeties, light boxes, daring people to run the football. The one thing that I know in talking to defensive coordinators around the league, they say, running game is a slow death. And how many offensive coordinators are committed to running the football? Because it takes a lot of plays to run the ball at the length of the field. We talk about the ball starting at the 20-yard line. To run the ball to get 80 yards, 10 to 12 plays. The odds are in the defense's favor that the offense is going to have a penalty, have a mistake, have a turnover that is going to halt the drive before they get into the scoring area. More teams are willing to play those odds and say, hey, quarterback, we know you got that big arm. You can throw it over the top. We're going to take that away. And we're going to dare you to nickel and dime it, because you don't have the patience nor the discipline to stick to that style. That is not really the style that you prefer.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different layers to this. You know, when you think about the two high shells these teams are running, I talked about it with a game I had last week where Chargers would get 8 yards, 9 yards on first down. And I'd say, okay, well, maybe they can take a shot here on second and one. That's kind of a shot type down and distance. Mm-hmm. The safeties are still in the parking lot. They're like, oh, you want to run for 4 or 5 yards, get the first down, knock yourself out. We're not going to give up a shot play here. So it's just that discipline defensively to stay in that and make you have to methodically work down the field and make you, you know, be successful in the red zone. Sevens, not threes. Like, that's why, to me, I think there's a lot of things that now come into discussion. We've been talking about this for a while. Mm-hmm. This is a great article. I encourage you to read it with some unbelievable mm-hmm. quotes and explaining this whole thing. Now it's, where do you go from here and how does it impact scouting and team building? And that's what I want to get to, because when you look at different positions, at quarterback, processing has never been more important. Why is it that we're seeing guys like Brock Purdy, you know, have tremendous success? Because now that's huge. Look at what Tua's doing. Processing, that's his superpower. I mean, look at Joe Burrow, and they were able to get vertical until teams started mm-hmm. putting this shell over them, and it's talked about in the article. Joe Burrow's superpower, processing. Like, that's never been at more of a premium than it is right now because of the defensive structure to take away deep balls. You got to be able to find guys, get it in their hands, and get them to run after the catch, which gets me to the wideouts, which is, Buck, I don't know, and we've talked about strength before. Strength, toughness, run after catch. That's the 49ers, and the way defenses are playing right now, I think run after catch has never been more important than it is right now at the wideout spot.
Speaking of wideouts, it's never been more important than the current era that we're in terms of your ability to catch it on the move and make things happen. Going all the way back, we've talked about this. I told you, when I played for the Green Bay Packers, and then when I later worked for Disciples of Ron Wolf, the number one thing that we wanted when it came to wide receivers, outside of the requisites for the position, we wanted guys who have return skills in their background. We wanted punt returners, kick returners, guys that had open field running ability. Because if you are a returner, one, you got the courage, you're fearless when it comes to being able to move and evade in traffic. Two, mm-hmm. you have some kind of elusiveness that is going to allow you to turn short gains into big gains because you're used to moving through all the traffic. The other thing that allows you to do is those guys that are the punt returners, the toughness in terms of, hey, man, you don't catch the ball and just slide. We're trying to move and we're trying to turn a 5-yard gain into a 12-yard gain. When you mention the San Francisco 49ers, because I think in the last 4 years, they've been at the top of the league in terms of yards after catch. Well, let's just look at who they have in their wide receiver core. Deebo Samuel, outstanding punt returner and kick returner at South Carolina. Brandon Ayuk also was good in the return game. So now you're looking, Christian McCaffrey, running back, excellent in the return game. So now the magic happens when they get the ball to these guys in the perimeter. It now becomes a punt return with fewer people around mm-hmm. them. So their ability to break a tackle, slip out a tackle with the balance and the strength that you're talking about, it's scary. Tyreek Hill is another one that we can talk about. So you're seeing more of those guys coming to the league. And DJ, it also coincides with something that we kind of talked about in the preseason. With more of these guys beginning to look at punt returners, we're seeing the size on the perimeter go from, hey, I want the 6'3", 6'4", yeah. wide out to, hey, we're kind of coming back down to the 6-foot guy who has punt return skills, who looks a little more like you and I, as opposed to the superheroes like DK Metcalf and others on the perimeter.
Yeah, and I think there's another great point that you just made there that I want to tap into. So because of all this, the rushing yards and totals went way up last year. So the importance of the run game. Now, here's what I want to get to you on. So you would say if you're going to play with two high safeties and you're in nickel majority of the time, mm-hmm. as teams are, that your nickel has to be a good tackler, has to be a force player, because they're going to bring him in. They're not going to block him a lot of times. They're going to run at him and they're going to force him to make the play. It's just we want little guys to tackle big guys. It's kind of football 101. So they're going to make him a force player and they're going to make him have to make tackles. So here's the dilemma. You need a nickel who's big enough to be the force player and be a reliable tackler so you don't get gouged in the run game. But now you're going to ask him to run around and mirror your little slot receiver who's quick as a cat, who you've talked about as a punt returner and is so elusive and explosive. That now has become one of the more difficult positions to find, somebody that has those two abilities to force the run and to be able to slow down and tackle in space against some mm-hmm. of these athletes.
Yeah, it's one of the things, like being able to tackle in space, bigger bodies in terms of like thicker bodies. Deebo Samuel is a different animal on the perimeter. You look at him, oh, he's 5'11", but he's 215 pounds. Yeah. So you have to physically thump him. You can't ankle bite him. You can't roll tackle. Your guys in the secondary have to be great tacklers. And if you have a weak link out there in the secondary, the ball is ultimately going to find them. and you're going to be mad that on a crossing route that should be a 7-yard gain, it goes down the sideline for 80 because your guy couldn't tackle. It's important. Also, let's talk about this because you talked about the running game. In the past, what used to happen is the running game would dictate how teams would play you from a coverage standpoint. If you had a successful run, after a while, defensive coordinators say, hey, man, we can't stop the run. We got to drop a guy in the box. Now you can't necessarily get it just by the production on the ground. DJ, you remember how many tight ends we saw get drafted? Why are we seeing more tight ends? Because when you put multiple tight ends on the field, some of those too high looks, you can't do because you have a soft edge.
You got to get bigger bodies out there.
Got to get bigger bodies. You can't play too high because one of those edges are weaker. So, hey, we might want to go more 12, more 13 personnel. So now I lure you into the box so I can get and manufacture the home run shots on the outside.
Which gets me to the Jets. Like, it from what we talked about at the beginning of the week, how is Zach Wilson going to be successful? How are the Jets going to navigate life without Aaron Rodgers? They're going to do it like you just said. They're going to get in 12 and 13 personnel. I think they should lead the league in 13 personnel this year and say, okay, we're going to get you where you're comfortable in that too. You're not playing that structure against us. And guess what? If we can get you blocked up, we've eliminated a layer of the defense and you're going to see Breece Hall and Dalvin Cook. That's where our explosives are going to come from.
Okay, this wasn't on the pod, but now since we've kind of made that thing off the deep ball, here's what I'm going to say about everyone who is like raining the parade on the New York Jets. Pause on that. Mm-hmm. They still can win with Zach Wilson. It just requires them to do it a different way. You talked about big boy personnel on the field, multiple tight ends, and they have good tight ends. You talked about the running game, Breece Hall and Dalvin Cook. That two-headed monster can be a problem in terms of, okay, you can sit in that two-eye shell because you don't want Zach Wilson. Cool, we'll just run it 40 times and we'll bust him. The other part of what you're talking about with 12 and 13 personnel, Garrett Wilson's one of the best route runners I've seen. Going all the way back to when I was in Kansas City. When I was in Kansas City, people may not remember this. Joe Horn was the Z receiver when we would go 12 personnel or 22 personnel, two backs, two tight ends with Joe Horn out there. He and Tony Gonzalez. Tony Gonzalez at tight end, Joe Horn out there. They're running all kinds of like two-man routes, creating problems. If Nathaniel Hackett wants to, he can create big play opportunities for Garrett Wilson by having him on isolation routes opposite the heavy formations and say, what are you going to do? You're going to double team Garrett Wilson? Cool. We're going to run the ball to the front side all day. There's a way for offensive coordinators to create the deep ball, the big play opportunities, but it requires personnel matchups more so than just a philosophical approach. You have to have the big bodies, the personnel to make people get out of that too high shell as opposed to, oh, we're just going to run it and they're naturally going to drop them. You're going to have to formation them to get them out of that too deep look so you can have those shots.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting, man. I think it's a fascinating discussion. But it's, again, great article. Go check that out on ESPN.com. Brooke Pryor did a wonderful job. So shout out to her. Good work there. All right, Buck, that's going to do it for us today, man. This is a fun one. We've got one more episode coming your way tomorrow where we'll dig into a little bit of what's going on this weekend. So be on the lookout for that. I did see we got a few more ratings and reviews. We appreciate you doing that for us. Wherever you're listening to this thing, if you just give us a little love on there, it continues to get the word out and grow this thing. Because word on the street, Buck, we are 2 weeks away from episode 1K. 1,000 Move the Sticks episodes. So we're going to celebrate the heck out of that here in a few weeks. But anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
No, this is, I love having those discussions. The deep ball discussion was fascinating. I feel like it's one of the things that we've talked about, but now that it's getting more attention, it allows us to add a little more perspective to what everyone in the league is talking about when it comes to defending the deep ball and why some of the air yards and the passing numbers have gone down despite the league passing more as a pass happy league.
No doubt. Fun discussion. We'll have plenty more of those coming your way here. We appreciate you hanging with us, and we'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower
37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.